Hey there, how are you doing? Hope you're doing really, really well. And welcome to open class number 51. Really excited about this one. I'm going to continue the attempt at bringing natto your way of like, not, oftentimes I'll probably answer off the cuff because that's kind of like my default thing. It's easy, but I'm going to try to be more structured again and bring more of the concepts in with the answers. And what else? Oh, the book, This Is Natto, is coming along pretty well. I think it's going to be a really good book. I felt there was another announcement I had. Oh yeah, it was more like, I think I'm going to try to really, really answer emails well here. And we may not, we may go, I'm going to aim for going like maybe 30, 45 minutes each time we have open class. And what actually now I remember what I wanted to say, which was that I think we're already reaching a point where we may be getting a little bit of backlog with emails. Coach Michael did an extra open class today to answer some questions, and we will still we'll work our way through all the questions that come in, and we're super grateful for them. Without questions, there wouldn't be a channel, but just keep that in mind that we may not get to them as quickly as we have in the past. But okay, that said, let's jump into some emails that we have, or some messages rather. And by the way, if you want to send a message to Open Class, then you can go to our web page, thesleepcoachschool.com, and then there's a banner up top where you can submit a question. All right, so this is our first question for today, our first message from today from Jackie. Let's read it. Hi, Daniel. I visited the channel a few times. You have provided a lot of useful information. Thank you for the support, Jackie. Especially the success stories, because they relate so much to me. It gives me hope that it is possible, but it sometimes adds to frustration that I'm unable to get where they are at. I actually read this before, and I want to just pause there for a second and say this, that when you hear somebody on the channel here share a success story, it is because they didn't get to a place where they're sleeping well because they did something, but because they realized there was nothing they could do. They realized that there was no control to be had. They went towards non-doing, non-achievement. They did less, And I just want to point out that because that's so common. It's so common to hear like, I'm unable to, but just in that wording, whenever you say I'm unable to, that implies that you're trying to do something, meaning you're trying to sleep, and that is, of course, why you struggle with sleeping. So I just want to point out that all the success stories, success comes from non-doing, which is kind of weird because you think of success like I did it, right? But here in the sleep world, success comes from non-achievement, from non-striving, from not doing anything, So I just want to point that very important pointer out. Point the pointer out. Okay. All right. I decided to purchase your book, and I'm assuming set it and forget it and read it. I don't want to get into that much detail about what has happened, but like you said, no insomnia is unique. The only thing that matters is that I'm trying to get better. I do have a few questions, and hopefully you can provide more insights. Absolutely. I'm currently surviving on poor sleep, definitely just getting by. I'm going to get off some sleep medication soon because I know it doesn't really help me. It's just lacking confidence to do so. I'm setting a sleep window at 6.5 hours now, but my hyperarousal prevents me from feeling sleepy. Let's take a look, like real quick pause there and comment on this. Firstly, I want to say that, you're on the path. That's fantastic. You're learning. That is great. Confidence is tricky because I hear so often that someone says, like, I'm trying to build confidence, but I just can't get there, or I thought I had great sleep confidence, but there was this one night where I didn't sleep, and now my sleep confidence is like completely shattered, et cetera. And where I'm going to say, what I want to say here is that I think sleep confidence is a good thing. Like, if you believe that there's nothing wrong with you, when you've seen that, you've experienced that, that is good. But other than that, sleep confidence is passive. You cannot actively build sleep confidence. There's nothing you can do to be like, okay, I'm gonna prove that I can sleep now. I'm gonna think about it and like, I'm gonna build that sleep confidence so I feel confident, and then I can get off my sleep medications, for example, because then it becomes an effort again. It's like confidence is something that that happens passively. So I just want to say sleep counts is a good thing, but you know, it's not something that you should try to get or try to build, because then it becomes an effort and it's very, very tricky. The only thing that really truly is an active part of the process is learning. So I encourage all my clients nowadays, so what I really say is like focus on learning and education. Then the magic of that becomes that you learn and that's, you know, sets the foundation for sleeping well. When there's no mystery, you understand everything. But also when you focus on learning and understanding, it takes the focus away from sleep. So I tell all my clients now, like, focus on learning and sleep will happen when it happens. Don't focus on sleep, focus on learning. So that's another, I think, very important point. All right. So, and then sleep window, I set a sleep window at night of 6.5 hours, but my hyperarousal prevents me from being sleepy. Great insight there. It's very good that you realize, Jackie, that there's nothing wrong with you. It's not like you aren't sleepy enough. There's nothing wrong with like your body's like not producing sleepiness. It's just simply hyperarousal is preventing you from feeling sleepy. That's it. Very, very good. I've gone many nights of just fragmented sleep, not feeling whether I slept much at all. I try to do enjoyable things before head into bed, but I never get that sleepy feeling. So I don't know when to head into bed. Even I'm yawning to a point of tears, and I know I'm just super excited. When I go to bed, I become awake and alert. I really don't know when I should be going to bed. This is very important. Let's spend some time here. And we are gonna talk about, let's talk about the Houdini effect. Houdini effect, because it's such a common one. I think a lot of people will recognize this one. So the Houdini effect is when you feel sleepy, tired, yawning, like eyes are dropping. You can hardly keep your eyes out, head bobbing. As soon as you go to bed, boom, you're wide awake. And the tricky thing there is that it seems like the sleepiness just went away. It's like, I can't hold on to that sleepiness. I think it was actually Michael that told me about one of his clients who literally moved her bed close to like her couch, her TV, so she could just like watch TV. And as soon as she fell asleep, she would just jump into bed quickly so the sleepiness wouldn't vanish. But of course it still did, because as soon as your intent becomes sleep, as soon as you go from, it's okay if I'm awake, I'm watching TV, I want to be awake now, my intent is to be awake, then sleep comes very easy because there's no threat picture, you know, you're, you know. But as soon as you think, now I want to sleep, as soon as you think, now I want to sleep, you're also thinking, now I don't want to be awake. And now that threat is there. The wakefulness is going to come. The wakefulness, which is that perceived threat, the thing I don't want, is going to come. As soon as you say, I want to sleep, that wakefulness threat comes in. Your brain becomes really hyper-aroused. And then the hyper-arousal becomes the dominant, you know, sensation, if you will. And then you don't perceive any sleepiness. And it seems like the sleepiness disappeared, but it wasn't. It was just your intent became sleep, and then you became hyper-aroused, and then the Houdini effect kicked in, and you felt that the sleepiness disappeared. And now a very question becomes then, a common, I think, good rule of thumb, you know, that I tell a lot of people is that, you know, just when you feel sleepy, then, you know, you can allow sleep to happen. But then oftentimes people are like, but I never feel sleepy. By the way, we should do a separate episode on this, but I never feel sleepy. What should I do then? Okay, I want to say, if you never feel sleepy, what's the most important there? Don't wait for sleep. Don't wait for sleep. That is the key. So, because what often happens is that when you've heard this, like, I should go to bed when I feel sleepy, then you're waiting for sleepiness to happen. You're like, I still don't feel sleepy. I still don't feel sleepy. I still don't feel sleepy. When am I going to feel sleepy? And then just the mere fact that you're waiting for sleep to happen is going to keep you awake. That is going to become, you know, that is going to increase your hyperarousal. So super important not to wait for sleep. And the NATO analogy that we have there is waiting for milk to boil. You know, you're standing over the pot waiting for the milk to boil. It just takes forever. It's frustrating, annoying, you know. But as soon as you head elsewhere, you return and the milk has like, it's boiled, it's like a burnt mess, right? So don't wait for sleep to happen. And I think timelessness is really important here. Let's do another banner on that one, like the timeless way, super important. The timeless way. And what that means is that, you know, Yaki, you had said you had like a sleep window of 6.5 hours, which means that maybe you get up at six, you wait till like 11:30 to go to bed, which is fine. And that's what I talk about instead of then forget it. But I've come to think that a sleepless time window is much better. So instead of having that sort of tight window, allow yourself more. Like maybe it's better to say, I'm going to stop checking what time it is at 10:30 instead. And then not wait for sleep to happen. You know, do things you enjoy. But here's the thing. There has to be no intent. No intent is extremely important. So oftentimes I hear this, like, I try to do things like I enjoy. I try to watch some Netflix. I try to do this, but it doesn't help. Well, there you go. You were trying. Or the opposite is like, I watched some Netflix, but I still didn't fall asleep. And when you hear, but I still, then it's like, okay, there was effort there. You were trying something. So no intent, you know? And then turning this backwards, like, how do you know that you're doing this without intent? Well, if there's no thought, I hope this will help me, or I will see if this works, or I'll try this. If that thought doesn't cross your mind and you're just doing because you feel like doing, there's no intent. That is the way. That is very, very helpful. Okay, let's keep reading. I really don't know when I should be going to bed. It doesn't really matter, to be honest with you, Jackie. Like, as long as you're befriending wakefulness. So that's another key, not a concept, is befriending wakefulness. As long as you are doing things that make it more acceptable to be awake, whether you're in bed or outside of bed, it really doesn't matter. Often it's kind of helpful to be in bed because then there's not that step there, like you're watching TV and like, and now I feel like going to bed, and then you go to bed and now you're wide awake. If you're already in bed watching some Netflix, reading a book, listening to a podcast, it's kind of like more natural to just like, oh, I'm in bed already. I'm enjoying this. Oh, now I feel like maybe I should just close my eyes and rest. And then you do that. And again, closing your eyes to rest is often sort of more helpful than like, now I'm going to sleep. Because if you just close your eyes and be like, I'm just going to rest now, I have no intent of sleeping, really, I'm just going to close my eyes to rest, then sleep kind of comes easier. Okay. I lay in bed feeling calm and relaxed, but I don't fall asleep. Should I just stay in bed and do something? Yes, we just answered that. Exactly. If I continue to lay in bed and not sleep, do I not build a strong association with laying in bed and not sleeping? Oh, love this one. All right, now we can talk about something else I write about in my new book, which is, it's called Implied Controllability. Okay. And this is basically my critique of traditional CBTI. You know, the great thing with traditional teaching is the education, like the 3P model is fantastic and a lot of things are very good. The problem with traditional CBTI, the problem with CBTI, in my opinion, are two things, which is sleep restriction and stimulus control, because both of them are built around the problem I see with them is what I call implied controllability. And in this case, we're going to talk about conditioned arousal, which is what you're talking about here. Let's talk about conditioned arousal. Okay, so the traditional teaching here is that when you've had trouble sleeping for a while, your bed, your sheet, your bedroom environment, stuff like that, has become associated with insomnia, with not sleeping. So now that when you go to bed, you immediately feel awake because you've conditioned your brain in that fashion. So then the traditional teaching says, if you're not sleeping, then get out of bed and only use the bed for sleeping. So when you go back to bed, you know, don't spend too much time in bed, but if you don't fall asleep, get out of bed again. So you're supposed to like recreate association, bed, sleep. The problem here is this is way too simplistic. When you have trouble sleeping, anything can trigger that hyperarousal. You know, if you see a cat yawning, you may go, oh no, that brought me to sleep. I can't sleep. Oh my God. Right. But you don't have to like rework on that association, you know, because there's really that, because that's not the thing. The thing, the problematic association is wakefulness and fear. Wakefulness and fear. That's the conditioned, you know, conditioned, that's the conditioning that's problematic that underpins everything else. So the bed, the sheet, the linens, they're not a problem, you know, and you cannot force associations. You cannot be like, okay, now I'm going to bed and sleep so I can associate the bed with sleep again. No, that just creates more pressure to sleep and more trouble. So the key is always befriending wakefulness, you know, and when you befriend wakefulness, when you're okay to be in bed or outside of the bed or in this environment, when none of that, when wakefulness becomes something you have no problem with, then there's no problem whatsoever being in bed. That's implied controllability. That's the problem with traditional teaching. Okay, cool. Let's move on here. I know it's really important to get out of bed the same time every day. I want to modify that and say, you know, as a rule of thumb, it is helpful to get out of bed, you know, at about the same time every morning. But even that can become like, that should not become an effort, right? So if you have an alarm that goes off and you think, yeah, it's probably good for me to get up now, and then you get up, that's great, because you then set like a rhythm that can make everything more easy, right? But you don't have to like jump out of like the military, like, oh, I'm off, I gotta get out of bed immediately. Not like that. You know, you just have to put it this way. This is the thing. This is the important thing. The reason I say that it's generally speaking helpful to get out of bed about the same time every morning is that it keeps you from chasing sleep. Oftentimes when you have insomnia, you have trouble sleeping overnight, and then it's morning and you want to get some more sleep. You want to get a little bit more sleep in, so you stay a little extra to try to get a little bit more sleep. And the problem with that is that it reinforces the narrative that you should be chasing sleep and that not sleeping is a bad thing. So it trains the brain that not sleeping is bad, and then the brain thinks that's a big threat, and it looks out for wakefulness more, and then you have like insomnia. So when you don't do that, when you get up about the same time every morning, regardless of how much you slept, you're kind of teaching the brain that it doesn't have to be afraid of being awake. You are taking it, it's actually an act of letting go. It's an act of letting go. It's not doing something, it's doing less again, you know? So it's not actually important to be up like exactly the same time every morning. It's just important to let go of chasing sleep. So it's good. I think it's good to like, if you wake up and you feel like, I just want to sleep a little extra, then of course do that. But if you wake up in the morning and you're like, I think I should be getting up now, but I want to get a little bit more sleep, I want to squeeze a little bit more sleep in, then it's good to be up. Then you should definitely be up. Okay. Very good. So we talked about that. When I don't sleep at all, it's difficult to get out. No problem there. Of course, do I have to get out of bed? Absolutely. Or can I lay in bed with the intention of no sleep? Yeah, exactly what we talked about. That is hard, because when I don't sleep at all and it's time to get out, I just want to curl into a ball. Could I even lay down on the couch, or can I lay down at all? The key there is intent. If you're chasing sleep, you're like, I'm going to try if I can see some, get some more, best not do that. But if you're just like, I think I want to take a nap now, I want to sleep a little bit more, that's totally fine. You mentioned a lot about not paying attention and do something enjoyable during the day. How can I not pay attention to sleep when I have very tired eyes, constantly exhausted and yawning all the time? It always serves as a reminder. This has been going on for like 9 months now. I'm just so exhausted. I really hope and want to trust what you're saying. I know the sleep effort that I have done has eroded my sleep confidence. Okay, let's stay on fatigue here. If you check out a playlist that's called This Is Natto, there's an episode about battle scars, which talks about how everything you like, those things, the fatigue, the eyesoreness, the pain, like all that stuff is what I call battle scars. And they come from the battle. There's no opponent. There's no enemy. There's no, like, insomnia isn't a thing. It's the battle. It's a constant, like, trying to sleep, trying to figure it out. That is the battle that's causing that. So the important thing there is that when the battle ends, when you're no longer struggling, then you feel much better. But I want to talk about something else that is very related, which is the emotion fatigue. Okay, well, let's talk about this for a second. So there are basically, you know, two broad categories of fatigue, let's say. One is the very simple physical fatigue. You ran half a marathon, let's say, you feel tired in your body, feel that fatigue in your body, you rest, you feel better, that's it. Now, when it comes to insomnia, you have what is much more of you have an emotional fatigue. It's a deep-rooted, like, feeling of defeat, you know, like you're tired at your core, your bones, you know, you're exhausted, you have no energy, you know, like life is sucked out of you. You don't want to do anything, right? That is not a physical fatigue. That is an emotion. That is an emotion, just or if it is an emotion, like maybe debatable, but it behaves exactly like an emotion. It's like emotional fatigue. But I think of it as an emotion. And why is it helpful to think of it as an emotion? It's again because it behaves just like an emotion. For example, anxiety is an emotion, right? And the problem when you have a lot of anxiety is that the brain has started to treat the emotion anxiety as a threat, and it tries to get away from it, deploying fight or flight. And the more you try to get away from being anxious, when you're like, I got to figure out why I'm anxious, I got to stop, you know, do things so I become less anxious, it becomes more sticky, it becomes stronger. And emotional fatigue, or the emotion fatigue, is just the same. The more you wonder why you're so tired, how you could be less tired, you know, et cetera, the more sticky becomes, the stronger it becomes. So here, when you experience like the emotion of fatigue, the solution is, it's actually kind of always this one. Let's do this combo. Awareness plus self-kindness. Okay, equals magic. Magic. No, I misspelled that, but you get the point. So when you have this fatigue, you're feeling really sore, you're you know, you feel kind of battered, etc. Know that the fatigue comes from the battle, and when the battle ends, you're going to feel better. Know that it's emotional fatigue. This is an emotion, and again, the more you resist it, the more you don't want to have it, the stronger it gets. Deploy awareness. When you know this itself, it's like demystifying, and then it's like, okay, I understand why this is happening. But then self-kindness is super important, because if you beat yourself up for being so tired, if you're wondering why you're so tired, if you think you're too tired, you shouldn't be this tired, it's unacceptable being this tired, you're going to get stuck. But when you deploy self-kindness and you go down the path of like, I'm really tired, but that is expected because I'm struggling so much. I'm trying so hard to sleep. It's expected for me to be this fight. I'm going to allow myself to feel the fatigue, you know? I'm not going to do anything to fight it. And which leads to effort here, because I do think, like, generally speaking, it's helpful to, like, not let insomnia to control your life, do things you enjoy even when you feel tired. But you shouldn't push that, you know? If you push yourself to do things you enjoy even if you feel tired, then again, remember, fatigue is like an emotion. The more you push yourself to not feel fatigued, the more fatigued you're going to feel. So it's really helpful in that case to deploy self-kindness, allow yourself to do less, allow yourself to rest, maybe allow yourself to take a nap, and be kind to yourself. That is very, 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 very helpful, super helpful. I know the sleep part that I have done has eroded my sleep confidence. That comes back, as we talked about in the earlier part. It's really hard for me not to self-monitor every day. I just don't have the trust that I can forget it when it has been my focus for the last 9 months. Which brings us to, you know, to like forgetting and thoughts here. So what I want to go here is that you often hear, also speaking of those success stories we talked about earlier, is that a lot of people say, I stopped obsessing. I stopped thinking about it so much. I stopped paying so much attention, which actually is not quite true. So we'll see here, like, how are you going to put this? Like, not obsessing. Obsessing is a non-action. Let's put it that way. So it's not like you can stop yourself from thinking about something or stop yourself from remembering something. It's actually the opposite. It's actually the complete opposite. When people say, I stopped obsessing, it was because they actually no longer tried to stop themselves from obsessing, as weird as that sounds. But when you allow all the thoughts that come to your mind, like when you allow yourself to think about insomnia, when you allow that to happen, you naturally are not, you know, you're naturally going to be bothered less. And it sounds kind of weird when I say that, but the way I explain that is using, again, let's go over this real quick, brain train analogy. So this is basically that when you're thinking a lot about something, like sleep in this case, It is because the brain's in problem-solving mode. It's trying to warn you about something. It's trying to alert you to a problem, right? And in the brain train analogy, it is that your friend is going to cross the railway tracks, and you're trying to warn your friend, and she still keeps going. And then you warn her more and more and more and more. Finally, she turns around and tells you that there's nothing going on, there's no problem here, and then you feel no reason to warn her. And the memories, the obsessive thoughts, the thinking about it, it's basically the brain trying to keep you safe, saying, what if this happens? What if this happens? It wants you to do something, take action, proactive, because it's scared. The brain is scared. And when you try to stop that, it's kind of like you're not listening. So if you're like, I don't want to obsess about it, I don't want to think about it, I want to forget about this whole thing, then it's like, you know, the brain is just going to go all out. Like, you got to hear this, you got to hear this, you got to hear this, you got to hear this. So where does it sound like the not thinking so much about sleep comes from allowing yourself to think about it? Sometimes it's helpful to pick a time during the day to think about it, to maybe write it down. Sometimes it's really helpful to just, whatever the brain is warning you about, like imagine that in your head, like you're going to lose your mind. Then you're like, okay, I'm going to think about that. I'm going to actually imagine losing my mind, show the brain you're listening, and then it will not send those warning thoughts so much, and you will naturally, you know, you will naturally not obsess, not think about it. And that was really, really helpful. Hopefully you can help that. I look forward to hearing back from you. I visited a channel a few times. You've read a lot of, I somehow jumped back to the beginning, I think. Don't know how that happened, but let's go back to where we were. I think we covered this. It's really hard for me not to self-monitor, and it's same thing there. Sort of like when you allow yourself to self-monitor, then you naturally shift out of that awareness plus self-kindness. Everything that you said makes total sense. It was definitely true when I was a regular sleeper, but now I'm so aware and hyper alert, it's hard to get there. And I hopefully look for it. Absolutely. I think you're on a good, very good trajectory. You have really good questions, and you know, it's hard getting there because you're trying to get there. You know, when you try something, it can be hard. When you're not trying something, it cannot be hard, actually. So thanks so much, Jackie, for this. And I think, Let's do one more message today, which is from Ellie. So I've been looking for an apartment, and your suggestion gave me a lot of clarity. I listened to the podcast with Joe, and I related so much to his story. That's Joe from, I always forget it's Indonesia, Jakarta. It's Indonesia, right? Joe from Indonesia. The mosque where he lived had installed like a new speaker system, and that bothered him a lot. But that wasn't actually the thing. That was not what caused so much disruption for him. It was actually his reaction to it. Good episode, that one. Now, I still feel pretty traumatized from the big one and putting myself in the same conditions with roommates as how it started for me. Just to remind you of the story of the big one, I had just moved into an apartment with two roommates who were very loud and random ties at night and would smoke in the apartment at night. So my brain became programmed to look for any of these threats. Along with that, during the week of the big one, I had stayed up for a series of nights studying way too hard for a test, which led me to lose a few hours of sleep every night. I also had quite a big health scare the night before the big one, which turned out to be a false alarm. So all of those things may have contributed to my chronic sleep anxiety. So I guess it's not really fair to blame it on my roommates. Good insight there. So this brings up my next question. Could stress from your day really cause you to still have paradoxical insomnia, light sleep at night? Or does this kind of sleep only happen when you're obsessing or actively thinking about sleep? And how could you sleep in a place where you are unsure of something happening at any moment in the night? I'm currently worried that if I live with the roommates again, which might make me anxious, it will make my journey of expecting insomnia harder. I feel so lost and cautious. I want to teach my brain that I can live with roommates again after trauma of the big one, but my God, it's so difficult. It's like PTSD, you say. It's hard when to say whether I have it in me to let go of and unlearn my insomnia while having the company of roommates and finishing my degree at the same time. Is it possible to do all these things under this much pressure? Or should I just save myself the trouble and live alone where I have less pressure? Thank you as always. Okay, very good. Good questions, Ellie. So firstly, we can talk about, hyper events, which is another concept here. And hyper events is these things that often seem kind of bizarre, like time skips ahead, or I'm jumpy, I have jerks, or I feel like this, I sleep nothing, but I have all this energy or things like that. Those are things that seem bizarre and they come from hyper arousal when your brain is in this kind of heightened state of alert, this anticipatory state. Now, can you have that time traveling, that paradoxical insomnia, like not knowing whether you slept or not from just general stress, or does it have to be like related to sleep? I think anything that makes you hyper aroused can produce that, you know, and I think it could be potentially actually more scary if your stress is not related to sleep, if you're just generally stressed and then you suddenly like you didn't sleep, like you were like, did I sleep or not? But anyway, to answer the question, it can hyper arousal, whatever causes it, stress, excitement, you know, anger, puzzlement, any of that can cause hyper events such as paradoxical insomnia slash time traveling. So that's the answer to that one. And let's share this again. How could you sleep in a place where you're unsure of something happening at any moment in the night? Well, it really becomes a matter of being willing to go there. So when you're unsure, like, you're like, I can't sleep because what if my roommate starts making noise? What if that happens? What if I wake up? That shows that you're, you know, you have that fear of wakefulness, that is insomnia. You don't want to be awake, you know, and you're also unsure if it'll happen or not. So I think the key there is to be willing to experience it. So when you just imagine that which you're afraid of, so you imagine that, yep, my roommates may play a lot of sounds. They may be smoking. There may be a lot of noise going on. That may wake me up. I may be up all night. That can happen. I'm willing to experience that. If only in my imagination, I'm willing to go there, even just in my imagination, then you're showing the brain that there's nothing to be afraid of. So I think that's the key to that one. Now, I think there was another one, which was the last one here, basically. Is it possible to do all these things under so much pressure, or should I just save myself the trouble and live alone where I have less pressure? This is, you know, a very, very good question. And I think we're going to call this, there are two things that we can talk about here that are both nano concepts. One is looming threats or looming obstacles. But the one I want to talk about actually is, let's talk about that one actually, looming obstacle. But this is when there's something, you know, you have to do in the future, but you don't feel like you have the confidence to do it right now. So you're thinking, when I sleep better, I will do that. And the problem here becomes that, you know, you have this thing that's looming, hanging over you, that is attached to sleep. That is, you know, this thing is going to happen, but you've put it off, right? So the problem with that becomes that you may never actually get to a place where you sleep well, because you always think that I have to cross that bridge in the future. You know, that bridge is going to come up on me. So generally speaking, you know, this depends from person to person. I think generally speaking, it's better not to put yourself in a position where you have a looming obstacle. You know, the same applies to people asking like, I want to stop, I want to stop taking this herbal tea, but I don't feel like I can do it now. I want to do it later. Sometimes that's really helpful. Like if you, whatever feels right is good. But when it comes to something like you describe here, like, should I stay safe and like not live with people, live by myself? I think that that actually also, we can talk about something else here that also leads to, what's this one? Agency seeding. Oh, this is a lot we can talk about here actually. So there are kind of two types. Sleep efforts, for anyone who's new here, is basically something you do with the intent of, producing or preserving sleep. And there's kind of like offensive and defensive ones. So let's just talk about defensive ones here. Defensive sleep effort. So an offensive sleep effort is like when you do something to sleep, like you take melatonin so that you can sleep. And the problem with that is confidence seeding, that, you know, you can easily get to a place where you think it's helping and then your confidence is eroded. But then we have defensive sleep efforts. A defensive sleep effort is when like, I'm not going to do this so I can preserve sleep. That's a defensive sleep effort. The problem with defensive sleep efforts is that they lead to, or can lead to, agency seeding. Agency is like the sense of having control of your own life. And the more you accommodate insomnia, the more you stay by yourself, you avoid social interactions, you keep yourself from doing things to preserve sleep, the more you cede agency, you kind of cede control of your own life, which is the problem with that one. And I felt there was another one, which is upping the stakes. But that's different. That's different. Upping the stakes is a different one. We should talk about that some other time. But just so you know, upping the stakes is basically when you say, like, when I sleep well, I will do this, which then ups the stakes, you know, makes you more pressure to sleep, which is different. So looming obstacle and agency seeding defensive sleep efforts, key NATO concepts that we have talked about here. So yeah, that was it. Ellie and Jackie, I hope this was really helpful to you guys. We will be back with probably Coach Michael may do an insight video tomorrow. I will definitely do one. I think tomorrow, oh, you have something to share from actually a client about OCD that was helpful. And I have another little insight. Actually, let me do this one for anyone that hears this, a little quiz to you. Classic one when it comes to, you know, the path to sleeping better is this one. I'm less anxious, but I don't know why I don't sleep more, you know? If you know the gas and brake model, then, you know, try to use that to figure out why it is that somebody often says, I'm less anxious, but I wonder why I don't sleep more. Figure that one out. I'm going to share the answer tomorrow or very shortly. So with that said, thanks so much for being here, and we'll be back with more very soon. Until then.